Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Hello, everybody. Happy Monday to you. We're still in the hot summer days here, and boy, the markets are mighty hot here, Joe and Scott. Lots to be talking about as it relates to interest rates. Nice rally. Good job, guys. Can you take credit for it?
I'd like to. Of course, don't blame me for the week before.
Oh, yeah. You'll take all the good news, credit for all the good news, but, you know, when it gets to that bad news stuff, yeah, we don't want to mess with that. So, come on, Joe. Scott, good to have you on the call, both of you. And let's get into it. Talk to me about what is happening in the way of interest rates.
Well, Dave, we have been in a pattern here, it seems, that we'll have one good week and one bad week. Last week was a good week. It just about completely reversed the rise in rates that occurred the week prior. And so we're back to where we were, you know, 2-3 weeks ago. And we've been in a range here, it seems like. The mortgage-backed security, the 4.5% coupon on the Fannie Mae mortgage-backed securities really stayed right at par. It's gone up, you know, go up a bit and then back down, but it seems to be holding in somewhere close to par. So, been a range and it's been rocky, but we've stayed with very low rates. You know, last week we saw some fundamental aspects of the economy coming through that helped mortgage rates. We saw retail sales were much lower than what people expected, especially if you take automobiles out of the measure. We saw CPI, the core CPI, which does not include food and energy, had a very small gain, and for the year it's a 1.5% inflation measure. But, you know, if you do include food and energy and everyone's costs that you, you know, what comes out of your pocket is based on full cost of things, we saw a 2.5% reduction in prices over the last year. And that's like the biggest drop in 60 years. So it's a really a strong reduction in prices, primarily as it relates to what's happening with the cost of energy. But, you know, all in all, Treasury auctions last week were well received, and as a result, we saw a nice little rally in rates, and that's continued on today. We're up a little bit today, too.
Yeah, I mean, let's qualify something. When they say they were well received, go expand upon that a little bit for some of the listeners that are not as attuned to the lingo. When you say, expand on the well received part. What do you mean by that?
Well, there are basically two measures that people focus on. One's the bid-to-cover ratio, which is a multiple of how many bidders there are for the dollar amount of securities to be auctioned. And what we've seen of late, you know, an average security is going to have somewhere around 2.5 times the bidders as there are actual dollars to be auctioned off. Anything over that's considered well received. Things under that, you begin to question the overall demand for securities. And then the other measure is has to do with how much indirect bidders there are. And indirect is primarily a measure of foreign interest in purchasing treasury instruments. It's not 100% foreign investors, but a strong number there indicates that we have not just a U.S. demand, but a worldwide demand for U.S. Treasuries. And so we've seen that bounce around 50%, but somewhere north of 50 is well received. If you get too far below 50, it begins to be questioned. So those are the two primary measures, Dave.
Well, there's been a lot of concern that we are, in fact, going to have both the direct or indirect, the foreign investors there. We saw a news flash this morning from the NBA news link that said that China is set to buy mortgages, and they're going to continue to stay remain a strong buyer. But there's been some other news, Joe, that's been a bit confusing about the Treasury backing off a little bit on the $300 billion that they talked about. Would you care to expand a little bit on all of that?
Yeah, they really haven't backed off, but what they've done is put a little finality to it. They announced that the $300 billion that was originally announced was going to be what they stopped at, and that they expect that that will be completed. Now in October, originally it was thought it would be completed in September, but you know that not a change, just some finality, and the market seemed to feel okay with that.
Yeah, and Geithner was on talking about that last week, and there's a lot of news on it. I did another Fox broadcast somewhere down these lines, and there's been a concern about interest rates rising and killing a bit of a recovery, a perceived recovery that's out there. We hope it's more than perceived, but the plan for the purchase of $1.25 trillion in mortgages or mortgage backs is we're about 68% through that. Do you give us a little more color and update on that?
Well, you're right. We're maybe even a little further than 60% through the purchases of the and what that is the government initially back in November of 2008 said that we're going to buy $500 billion worth of mortgage-backed securities. Those are things that they're going to do. They're going to be buying newly issued mortgage-backed securities. So they were really supporting the demand side of the sale of mortgage-backed securities, and anytime you have a big demand, you can see prices go up and mortgage rates come down. Well, adding to that demand had the effect of reducing interest rates on mortgages. Well, that $500 billion was being spent at a fairly rapid clip. A fairly large percentage of the mortgage-backed securities being issued were being purchased by the government or by the Fed through this program. And as that program began to near an end, meaning they were about to run out of the $500 billion, we did start to see mortgage rates rise a little bit. That was going on early March. At the March 18th announcement following their Fed meeting, the Fed said, we're now going to increase from $500 billion to the $1.25 trillion you just announced. That's what they said that the program is going to include. So they're now saying we're going to buy $1.25 trillion and we're going to do it this year, meaning that it would run out sometime in December. Well, that's what we're now a little more than 60% through. The question is what will happen at the end of that? The government has said, they put an end to the $300 billion Treasury purchase program. Are they going to do something similar to the mortgage-backed security purchase program? And when are they going to let us know? I think investors of mortgages are going to begin to be concerned, just like they were as we were nearing the end of the $500 billion. They're going to begin to be concerned that this is the end for the $1.25 trillion, and they might start paying less and pushing mortgage rates higher as we get to that point of concern about what's going to happen in January. I mean, that's a big question.
It's a delicate balance, Joe, that these guys are walking here. They're wanting, obviously, we're all hoping and believe that there's a recovery going on. Dave Asman on the Fox, the host of Dave and Liz were asking me the question point blank last week on the program. Do you really believe the recovery is that we're in a point that we're really experiencing a genuine recovery? And I think virtually every one of us would all say, absolutely, we want to believe that it's there. But it's what's going to be really critical to this. And I'm asking your comment on it. See if I stuck my foot in my mouth on national television last week. Is really critical that we have strong auctions on the mortgage backs, we have strong buyers in there, and see the Treasury back off, but keep rates low. And there's this, you know, so I'd love to have your thoughts on that, Joe, a little bit.
You know, Dave, I'm going to jump in here.
Well,
I'm going to backtrack.
It's good to have. I know you're such. You're just being a wallflower, quiet back there.
Yeah.
You're ready to jump in there. Yeah, give us your thoughts.
Well, you know, we'd just come off what was, you know, not a great week for mortgage-backed securities and rates, and we'd had, you know, relatively speaking, or at least compared to the previous few months, a pretty upbeat jobs report. Not nearly the amount of people lost their jobs that the market was expecting. So, you know, there's a pretty negative tone leading into the week, and then you have the FOMC meeting. And they say, hey, you know, the economy's not declining at the pace it was. It's basically a pretty upbeat forecast from them. You know, the only good news for mortgage-backed securities in there was that they feel inflation was under control. Well, so, you know, you feel like, oh, you may be set up for a little uptick in interest rates. We get retail sales Thursday that were just woeful, down a lot more than everyone expected.
Yeah.
They were expecting an increase of 0.7%. They were down 0.1. Retail sales are... basically drive everything in the economy. You know, people have jobs, they go spend money and buy things. And you know, then we had, as expected, a pretty tame inflation report, and we ended up having a heck of a rally for the week. And, you know, I would throw it out to everyone saying, you know, are we back to normal market forces here, that the Fed is saying, okay, we've done our job, things seem to be doing okay, and, you know, let the markets trade as they may. So...
Well,
they're
the
still supporting it with the Treasury purchases, the MBS purchases.
And I really value your input on that, Scott, and thanks for jumping in there. We're spending more time on this and giving this segment a little more time than normal because it is really – a lot of people are really wondering, are we back to something more stable? And the Treasury is certainly hoping so, I'm certain. But the reality is there's a number of factors that are going to continue to impact this. As you see the economic conditions – you know, the reports come out, and we got some. We'll talk about the economic calendar in just a minute, Scott. If you could, either you or Joe could comment on what we have coming up. As that news gets worse, then we're going to watch the equities, the stocks, Dow drop in prices, and MBSs go up, or generally Treasuries, the bond market will go up, which will continue to put a downward pressure on rates. Now, that's aside and separate from the other issue of how many buyers we have in the market. So it's definitely a balance. It's something interesting to be paying attention to. We need to get moving on here. But, Joe, give us a – Joe or Scott, give us a quick update on what we have on the calendar. I know we got core CPI. What's coming up on the calendar this week? And if everyone subscribed to MBS Quoteline, you'd be able to see it right online. You've got a great calendar up here, guys.
Tomorrow's it. PPI, that's the big report
PPI.
Of the week, and that's another inflation measure, and that's at the wholesale level, what costs are. Last week, CPI, Consumer Price Index. This is PPI, Producer Price Index.
Initials.
You know, the idea is if producers have to pay more to produce their goods, then they're going to have to increase prices and you have a little inflation. And that's really the headline for the week. There's some other manufacturing indexes and Treasury announcement coming out Thursday.
Well, the housing starts is another big topic that's going to be talked about, or that we're getting that report out on Tuesday. And I will be on Fox. So for those of you that are Fox Business viewers, or if you're not, go over and watch Fox. I'll be on at 11 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow talking about that report and as it comes out. Let's take a brief break right after this word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Well, welcome back. Good to have you. And we've got lots going on in the legislative update. Alice Alvey, you are always so informed on what's going on. You just must run the skin off the tips of your fingers doing all the Google searches and trying to stay up on all of this.
Oh, I wish I could get it from, you know, from just the search engines. But, you know, we're just so committed that we've got to read it straight from the reg and see what the attorneys and see what the examiners are saying on these types of things. So, yeah, I like to know what people are chattering about, but that can be very different from what's in writing in the reg. So, anyway, that's what's going. That's what we got. We got a lot going on right now, that's for sure.
Now we've got the red flags rule, which is, I need you to expound on that a little bit, has been extended again for the third time, now out to November 1st. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. As we mentioned before, the House is in recess until September 8th, so we just have a few things going on. We've had some rules published that we're watching. So the red flags rule applies mostly to the depository institutions, but you'd be surprised how many entities fall under this term creditor. This has been out there for a long time, so if you extend credit in any way to a customer, this law applies to you, where you really have to have policies and procedures in place to say, I'm helping watch for identity theft for you. And so you've got to set up procedures for detection, prevention, mitigation. And the thing that came out just the other, just last week is the FTC, in extending this, put some great new tools up on their website. So those of you who are smaller companies or don't feel you need you're very low risk in terms of identity theft because you're very hands-on with your clients, go to the FTC website. You can actually do ftc.gov, /redflagsrules, and I believe .com. Wait, no, I already did the .gov. What am I saying? The red flags rule. And when you go there, they actually have a fillable PDF for a policy template. So you can walk through the questions and get yourself, make your own policy, and actually help learn what the rule is and the law is as you go. So.
Wow.
So I thought that was helpful government
helpful.
Work there. Yeah. The other thing we're watching right now is, as you know, this Mortgage Disclosure Improvement Act has been kind of crazy to get implementation done. The FDIC issued their examination procedures, and that's ultimately where I go. You know, what's the examiner going to do when they come into my shop and say, you know, are you following these disclosures and getting them out on time? And so I think companies need to take a good hard look at what they're talking about in their exam procedures and what is an accurate truth in lending disclosure. So to consumers, you are supposed to get an accurate truth in lending disclosure at least 3 days ahead of closing. Now, sometimes you might not want to wait, but the lender's going to have to unless there's a bona fide personal financial hardship. So to the lenders out there listening, I say go read those exam procedures, or if you don't want to, then give us a call. We'll walk you through a couple of sticking points in those procedures.
Well, there is so much to be tracking on that. The regulatory part of the companies or the compliance departments and many of these companies, how are they dealing with all this, Alice? Are they able to stay up on this?
You know, I'm surprised. Some have done it well because they've got compliance officers who are well prepared, but there are many companies who really got caught off guard by how this really changes your mortgage procedures from everything from the very beginning of when we start talking to customers. And heads up, folks, October 1st is that implementation date for the definition of an application, really being almost every refinance application you touch may become an application and have to follow all these rules. So be very careful. If this Mortgage Disclosure Improvement Act had several implementation dates, we just made it by one of them. So, you know, it's a mixed bag right now that people don't have it 100% ironed out.
Well, I tell you, there is, and with the lenders we're talking to, everyone seemed to scramble to be on it. What are you seeing, Alice, by some of the leading lenders? Do they get a grip on this? Are they? What's your thoughts?
Well,
your observations?
A lot of the wholesalers have said that. So, just I guess to give a quick background, the annual percentage rate needs to be accurate at least 3 days ahead of closing on the truth in lending disclosure. If your first disclosure that you gave to the customer was right, great. You're not going to have a delay in closing. If processing's taken a long time, you're not going to have a delay in closing. But a lot of the wholesalers said, just if the APR is out of tolerance, we will require a new truth in lending disclosure. we're reading it that that still means if the finance charge is off as well, that you should redisclose. I'm not sure why the big companies, and I mean most of the big ones, have said it's just about annual percentage rate. We think to have proper consumer disclosure, you need to be watching the finance charges were accurate for the consumer as well.
Very important. That's there's a lot going on. Give us an update on the Neighborhood Preservation Act.
Yeah, this is the only thing that's moved. Actually moved last week. It passed the House back July 29th. It's now in the Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee of the Senate. This one would allow lenders to lease out loans that they've gotten back in foreclosure. We've talked to a couple companies who thought of this solution many months ago when they said, heck, you know, if I get a house back, I got a good customer, we just need to figure out a modification agreement, or they're not quite qualifying for modification. In their portfolio, can they keep the customer as a tenant or get a new tenant in and lease the house for 5 years and wait for the value to turn around, right? If they try and sell the property now, they're losing more money. And there's some banking regulations that prohibit them from getting into long-term leases. So this particular House bill, again, moving its way past the House and into the Senate now, would allow them to set up 5-year leases for properties that they've received back in foreclosure.
Well, the thought of being able to – it sounds like a great idea to be able to keep someone in their home, foreclose on it, but allow them to stay in the home. It's good for the banks because – the home is going to be maintained. It brings the possibility of possibly doing something for that homeowner when their situation that led them to foreclosure improves. And so there's some good things going on there. Have we talked briefly? No, update on the rules, Reg Z rules. Let's touch base, which is different than the Mortgage Disclosure Improvement Act. This is what's going on in the rules process. This is on rails. It's happening. It's going to come at us and here very quickly.
Yeah, it's the Home Secure Credit. It's a proposed rule that came out July 23rd. Here's the date everyone needs to listen to. There's a 120-day period for comment. That expires November 23rd. And probably the bullet that jumps right out at everyone is this. This will prohibit payments to mortgage broker or the creditor's loan officer based on the loan's interest rate or other terms. Now, that right there tells you, yield spread premium's going away, overagers are going away, and so compensation structures under this proposed rule would have to dramatically change. And a proposed rule is not the same as trying to work your way through Congress. This can happen, you know, unless, again, as an industry, we respond to this.
And that date, again, let's get that down for everybody to circle that date on their calendar and hopefully a lot of action items before that.
Right. Don't wait.
Don't wait.
You know, don't procrastinate. It's a 120-day comment period that will end November 23rd, right around that date.
Man. Not something that we want to be celebrating around the Thanksgiving table, but that's right at that time. My goodness sakes. So it's important that we're going to be talking more about that in the next segment. Let's take a quick break right after, and we'll be back right after this word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Well, good to have you back again. Boy, we touched on something that is going on in the industry. Very few people seem to be really viewing it, or at least it seems like that, but there's a sense, Alice, that everyone's resigned themselves to the Home Secure Credit Act or the rules changing about YSP, and I can't wait to get Scott and Joe in on this discussion briefly, but it is going to have a huge impact on what is going to be, how people are going to be compensated. I mean, for the first time, we're going to see where we're seeing regulation impacting how much money a loan officer can make in this industry. Now, they say not directly, but indirectly through YSP. Alice, this is really unprecedented.
Oh, I know. You know, Scott, I'm curious on your thoughts on this and if you've had a chance to look at it, because I agree, Dave. You would think there should be a firestorm of opposition on this, or I don't think people have resigned themselves that this is just going to pass.
No, I mean, Joe and I have kicked this around, and, you know, certainly it's out there, but it kind of goes back to what we'd said a couple of weeks ago, that there used to be one or two things out there that you'd watch and you'd kind of get energized about and comment on, and, you know, there's just, you know, so much coming at us. I get the sense that this one is really not getting the attention that it deserves, and it's certainly one of the biggest ones that we've seen, you know, since August of 07 when this whole mess started. But
yeah, because it's a rule. It's not a law. I mean, we're not waiting for a bill process. This is a faster process.
Yeah, and the implications of that are huge. Joe has brought up, what about the net branch arrangements, you know, where you're an employee, and those are really profit centers, and, you know, how are those people compensated, and how are their P&Ls taken care of, and loan officers, you know, that if this were to pass, you know, think how long it would take for comp structures to evolve and really catch up to this. You know, that certainly I would see, you know, a lot of issues for a lot of originators and a lot of small companies that are net branches, you know, immediately from this. You know, while the bigger company that they're partnered with or, you know, that they work for tries to work through this and say, okay, how can we get to a fair compensation level that satisfies them but yet complies with the law?
And there's a lot of good thing about having good salespeople, right? I mean, so
Can
I compensate sales some other way, not interest rate? I don't know. Dave, got any ideas on that
one? Well, yeah, here's one of the things that we're finding is what this is setting up for is bankers, mortgage bankers, anyone that is participating in the secondary markets is what I mean by being a full mortgage banker, is going to have the added advantage of making their additional income through a gain on sale, which is virtually a YSP, but made after the loan is closed. So what differentiates the difference between gain on sale and yield spread premium? A gain on sale is when you sell a loan to the secondary markets being after the initial closing has taken place. To the extent that we're now regulating what we can do with YSP is causing a herd stampede towards the mortgage banking door. Everybody's wanting to bang on that door and get through it. We, again, are a consulting firm that does a massive amount of that. I think we're the leading firm in the United States that does broker-to-banker conversions. And we are getting a significant increase in the amount of interest of making that conversion. The problem is the bar has been raised on the net worth requirements, so many are struggling to find their way to get up to that threshold and through the door. And so that's one of the things that are going on. So then we get into the discussion about, well, are all mortgage bankers created equal? And the answer is no. There is a difference, and this really goes to your answering your question, Alice, is some of the ideas of how people are dealing with this. A lot of them are crossing over and saying, I'm going to become a mortgage banker, and then they get there and they go, okay, now why is the guy across town able to charge, I mean, be able to pay so much more to in compensation? And we're going to talk about the ways they can do that. It's because the company across town is selling their loans on a mandatory basis versus a best efforts basis. And the spread difference between best efforts selling loans into the secondary markets, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or the conduits, Wells Fargo, Citi, pick whichever conduit or correspondent investor you want. If you're selling on a best efforts basis, you are at a disadvantage by as little as a point to as much as a point and three quarters, 170 basis points, can be dropped right to the bottom line as a result of selling loans on a mandatory basis. So what we're seeing is an uneven playing field even for those that have crossed over into the mortgage banking world. So it's really setting up something interesting for us as an industry. And Scott, are you seeing I know you run a work with as a mortgage banker and you have done some brokering. Are you seeing a desire to have more and more product put through the banking window, so to speak?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, the advantages are many, not only from a pricing standpoint, but really control. And that, you know, there have been years to now, up to now, that there wasn't that much better execution, but it was just being able to manage your operation and manage your process. And in this environment, we talked last week about Taylor Bean and Whitaker going out, you know, that the whole broker channel is just saturated, and there's a lot of upheaval. And so from a process standpoint, it's a tremendous advantage. I go back to what Alice said, and that is that your sales force is very valuable to you, and you make a conversion to banker, and that's great for the guy at the top, but the originator, that top originator, you know, how do you distinguish a comp plan for him? And
well,
you know,
that's a good question, and it's really a focus of some of our discussion before we got on there. On the program here, our pre-radio program, and one of the things that we're seeing is as they make the transition over to being a banker, and that income that they received as a broker, which is YSP, that YSP income, is now becoming a secondary transaction or a gain on sale, and that income come in. And so you're able to, as an originator, be paid from this secondary transaction. It's revenue into the company. And without question, without a good sales force, without a good loan officer team is what we're saying, your company is not going to prosper. And so how do you attract those better loan officers? Well, obviously, good salespeople do what? They follow the money. And for those companies that can pay greater incentives, greater income, the better off they're going to be. And if you're in the selling into the secondary markets on a mandatory basis, you can do things like, number one, pay a volume bonus. If you're able to produce up to certain levels, you're going to get a bonus on top of what you would otherwise get. And this can be either tied to the loan amount. Most of the time, it's tied to a funding fee. There's other incentive programs where they can have sales promotions, a lot of different things that are not going to be made available to anyone that was otherwise previously making their living off a yield spread premium. And Alice, you were talking about it earlier. There's also a consequence from when it comes to the type of compensation loan officers are, or the type of programs that are going to be going on out there. There's going to be no zero down programs, at least by the broker community.
Well, it'll be difficult to try and come up with, you know, those extra dollars. But I think, Dave, you were describing it well by saying everybody has to change the way they think, that this has now got to be a bucket of revenue coming into the company, and then how does that compensation go to the loan officer without it being related to interest rate? And by the way, folks, this is not just yield. They use the word overage as well. So those of you who think you're taking a flight to a bank and you're still going to get overages, this is going to attack that as well.
Yep.
Take compensation out of the interest rate game. So if you use volume bonuses, I don't think you can forget units, and I think you've got to have quality in there. Maybe for those of us on the QC and operations side, we're finally getting what we've asked for. Have some compensation based on quality.
Yeah, and it is so true. Scott raised up a good point, is you've got more control over your business as a banker, but along with that control comes a lot more responsibility and the opportunity to have a lot more negative consequences. Alice, you've seen this, certainly.
Oh, yeah, and I think when you say mandatory delivery, I know a lot of people just must get very nervous about that concept because they just don't run their shops that way. Now, to the customer, that's a good thing, but you know there's a lot of things beyond your control of why a loan doesn't close, so you've got to have options in the pipeline to substitute, and I think that's the level of control that's and confidence that's tough to get a grip on.
So I wonder if some form of profit-sharing arrangements won't become, you know, in vogue, and that those top originators may not be able to get more on an individual loan, but if that loan is generating a bigger bottom line, maybe they'll be able to share somewhat on a quarterly basis or an annual basis in the profit to the company.
I think that's a really good point. In fact, there's been a lot of discussion on some of the blogs and some of this. And what's interesting, the regulators are looking at this. They want to regulate everything that a loan officer makes if it has any way of tying that compensation back to pushing higher interest rates or bad, quote-unquote, bad loan programs off on consumers. And that's what they're going to be looking at. So this discussion is going to have to be one that is always keeping that in mind. The regulators are listening in on these conversations, not just this program, but all the conversations that are going on in the industry, the one like Alice and I recently spoke at, they're there, and they're listening to discussion. And their number one thing is, we're here to protect the consumer. At least that's what they're stating. There may be some other agendas out there, but I think that's legitimately probably the overriding agenda. Would you not agree, Alice?
Yeah, I think so. You know, the bottom line is, you know, it's not in the customer's best interest if the person who's taking your loan application is motivated to charge you a higher rate, you know, and it's hard to argue that point. That's the challenge on the sales side right now.
And also not only just the interest rate, but it's the programs. I mean, in this last business cycle, we watched pay option arm. We're looking at some of the zero down, you know, no documentations, no doc, no nothing. And, you know, we were saying it's fog the mirror and sign here kind of programs. If you had a pulse, you could get a loan program. And here's the thing, what's interesting is a lot of really well qualified A paper, you know, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac borrowers that would have fit nicely into that program were actually going into these programs, which were called subprime. They're more of an Alt-A lending program than a true subprime, because that there was so much availability to that product, the hassle factor had been taken out of the lending process. Scott, I know you saw that.
Yeah, well, certainly, and that's the genesis for this, and, you know, this action, and then wanting to regulate this, but, you know, and from just an intuitive standpoint, whether you're an originator with a dog in the fight or not, it's not hard to understand if you're being paid a half a point on a loan. If you're borrowing $60,000, that originator makes $300. If you're borrowing $250,000, that originator makes $1,250. Well, there has to be a true-up there for that originator to make the compensation that they're used to or entitled to. How has that happened heretofore? That $60,000 loan may have a higher interest rate that has more value in the secondary market. Loan officer is compensated for that. That has been a way for the consumer to not have to pay additional fees. So the whole YSP, the overage, certainly has its place. Has it been abused? Most definitely. But somehow there will have to be a true-up on that, because, you know, the guy waltzing through the door wanting to borrow $60,000, if there's a flat half a percent or whatever the number is per loan, I think we all know who's going to get the attention first.
Absolutely.
Well, it's a big issue, I think, just because of trying to balance all your fair lending issues in conjunction with this.
Yeah. Exactly where I was going to go with this thing is, we have new regulation that's here to protect the consumer. HVCC has delayed the appraisals getting done. We're seeing appraisals coming in at a lower value. At least that's the reports that are coming in. The general consensus is that this is cause for property values to not be able to be pushed up by the loan officers. What the threat, or that's what the concern was. I'm not sure if that was so warranted, but the bottom line is it certainly slowed up the process. Now, and going, I mean, it's almost diving back into the, and I don't mean to do this, I also get into the legislative segment of what our program, but a lot of the things they're talking about is adding 3 days here, doing one more day here. I mean, it is extending out the whole lending process. And we, for the years, have been trying to shorten it, make it, you know, better, faster, cheaper for the consumer to get through this otherwise very, very complex and complicated lending process.
You know, Dave, just the other day I had to get involved loan level on a transaction that the seller was pushing for a 20-day financing period contingency. And I had to speak with the listing agent and the selling agent and explain that it wasn't a company issue, it wasn't a capacity issue or our inability to get things through, but just all the mandatory timelines. And when you start to talk about HVCC and MDIA and the potential for redisclosure and all those things, it's like, I think you're doing the client a disservice. And so we're having to educate the real estate community that times have changed, and it is back to the future. And the old 30 to 45 day escrow is not out of the realm of reality right now. There are just so many things. You know, the 4506s, not only do you have them in there as a threat to use them, but now you have to execute them and get a transcript from the IRS. And all of those things are layers of process and time and potential for delay. And that's just what we're with, and we all have to deal with it.
It's the pendulum has definitely swung, Scott, back in a direction that is causing for longer closing periods. We're seeing reports of a lot of people saying, we're getting deals where they're saying a 30-day escrow. We're just immediately calling and saying, you better extend it. I'm not sure the real estate community has totally grasped the consequences or the impact of what is going on. They're out there just trying to sell property, and they're going back with their old thoughts. Well, I wrote a 30-day escrow in the last deal I wrote 9 months ago, and I got a hot deal. I'm going to write it again. Go ahead.
That's it. That's exactly where I was going with it, that there's an education process that has to happen. And that conversation I had to have was in the context of, well, my lender, you know, has always. Went into a discussion of, you know, what was is really not relevant right now.
Right, world's changed.
And when you're talking about control, we're talking about, you know, we don't really feel like we're in control. In fact, we're trying to control the risk component. And Alice, you've watched so much control get abused, and do a lot of training on helping lenders manage the control part of the process. And you made a comment earlier that was really good, and I want to make sure we go back and touch on it. The QC world, those that have been responsible monitoring quality control, the production side of the business for years has just seen you not controlling quality, but you're the deal killers. As the dreaded,
wait a minute.
Low, we know. I mean, I'm not saying it, but that was the attitude out there for so many. But the reality is that you have been always all about controlling. I mean, not you. I mean, the whole QC segment is in place for a purpose, to avoid a lot of these abuses. And we just kept stepping on you. So, yes, your point was, finally, we are getting to the point where this is a department that has maybe taken out of the basement and the back stacks of where all the loan files are stored and brought up to the appropriate prominence. And I think those companies that don't recognize that are going to really struggle and find themselves with penalties and possibly losses, Alice, and it's all avoidable.
Oh, yeah, and it's all, you know, Jan and I have always, my business partner Jan Wetzel-Trout, we've always joked around about, you know, all the reports that the company issues, how many companies actually issue a response and execute management response and execute policy changes when they have a report sitting right on their desk that says what it is they're not doing that's in compliance. And I think the reports on the new laws are going to be quite lengthy to begin with, until companies get a handle on all the red flags. Because there are going to be a lot of people trying to take shortcuts. Like you said, Scott, to your point, the real estate community is in shock right now. They're going, well, what do you mean? We didn't know this was going to affect us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a lot of finger-pointing going back to the mortgage bankers and a lot of that. Scott, I mean, how are you dealing with that? That's really a good point. I'm sure a lot of listeners, the loan officers, production folks, processing people that are listening to this program would love to know, how are you dealing with that?
You know, it's education up and down the line for the realtors, for the client. Because as we talked again last week, so many will be impacted. MDIA, if you get to closing, you have to redisclose. It's not that your company, ABC Mortgage, can't close it, won't close it, doesn't have enough people to close it. It's law that you must wait. Now you have your lock issue, maybe a seller's lock issue, a mover, all of that. And so, the buyers, just preparing them and informing everyone up and down the channel that, yeah, here are the things we have to deal with, and advising them properly. You know, ultimately, with us as a mortgage company, our responsibility is truly to our client and that borrower, and we need to protect them. And so, hence, we had that long discussion that give them 30 days for their financing, or otherwise, we are really ill advising you to have hard-earnest money at risk on a 20-day financing contingency.
The thing I want to do as we close out this segment, I just want to say this. Number one, loan officers, start the education process early. Get out there, start coordinating with your title companies, the closing agents on your transactions. Help get out. You need to be holding classes on this for those of you who are in retail, dealing on the purchase side of the business. Get the word out. It's critical. Let's take a brief break. We will be right back after this word.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line, are making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
It's good to have you back. There's so much going on in the world of warehousing. I mean, we could continue that previous discussion on and on and on. There's just a lot there. But there's been significant developments that in the world of warehouse lending. As everyone knows, it hit the press in a big way. It certainly hit the industry like a big rock going into a meteor going into a calm lake and just creating a huge tsunami, and that is Colonial Bank failing. And when the feds walked through the door, there was a 1-2 punch about it. Not only did they go through the doors of Colonial, but they went through the doors of Taylor Bean and Whitaker, one of the largest wholesalers in the country. And a lot of loans, I mean, they shut down, the Taylor Bean and Whitaker was shut down, a lot more to be revealed about what was behind that going on there. But that company had to be shut down overnight. They had their servicing pulled. That's another story. B of A is suing them for $1 billion. There's just so much going on in that. As a result of that, the fear was that this lender going out was going to wipe out one of the number one sources for warehouse lending. Colonial is the largest warehouse lender, folks, in the country, with over $4 billion in commitments. $1 billion was just to Taylor Bean and Whitaker. There was a huge concern that, oh my gosh, they're going out. This would have impacted. There were several reports. One was 77 lenders would have immediately been had to be shut down as well, because they had Colonial as their only warehouse facility. There has been angst, anxiety all over the industry at levels, even for those that didn't have a warehouse line with Colonial, because if they went out, everyone in the industry is out trying to apply for new or additional warehouse lines, because everyone's concerned with just being caught with one warehouse facility should the unthinkable happen to their one warehouse lender. So everybody's out applying for warehouse lines. And you dump $4 billion worth of new applicants that lost their warehouse line with Colonial into the market, it just creates a barrier of entry that's continued to be more and more challenging for so many of these coming on. But folks, there's been some really good updates this week, and I'm happy to tell you that BB&T has picked up not only the branches, but we're hearing reports. It's unofficial, but we're hearing reports this morning that BB&T is also going to pick up their warehouse lending division, and continue that program. Again, that's not official, but we've been hearing that go back and forth. Let's just hope and pray that is the case. Like one client said to me, he says, you know, I don't consider myself a very religious person, but I find myself doing a whole lot of praying over my warehouse lately. It cracked me up. And so there's a lot of folks gotten religion on this topic for certain now.
I hope it works.
No kidding. We've got to see them. There's also significant developments that are going on that Citi is coming back into it, and they're coming into the tune of $2 billion initially. There were several reports running out there. They're making a $6 billion commitment to the mortgage industry, per se, in a broad sense of the term. And then there is a report that all $6 billion is going to go warehousing. Initially, it's $2 billion going into warehousing. They're going to be launching that program. A lot of questions. Does that mean they're resurrecting and releasing the space at First Collateral? Again, they acquired they got First Collateral, which was one of the largest warehouse lenders, one of the long-standing, well-established warehouse lenders. They shut down at the last loans, I think, were off the books at the beginning of the year. So we thought they were off the landscape going away, and now the announcement this week came out that they're coming back. We're very encouraged by you folks there at Citi stepping up, stepping back into the market. And we've got some great warehouse banking companies, companies like Nat City, that would love to see you jump in there and pick them up. But anyway, there's a lot of encouragement in this area, Alice, and this is something that's been so necessary. And you hear the cry for warehousing out there.
Oh, yeah, we do. And, you know, it's just their hands are tied. So companies just have to manage within the lines that they can have, and it causes some headaches. Scott, I'm sure you probably deal with it as well, where you're trying to bounce between the limitations of the line, and then you end up having to broker the other loans where you could be making more profit.
Sure, and the frustrating piece is when you do have to split it up like that and you have those small tail pieces. Maybe you have $350,000 left in one line, but you have a $417,000 loan to fund.
Oh, yeah.
So you really have capacity between all your lines, but you don't have enough in either one or any one to get a loan funded. I would, you know, encourage listeners to think through that if Colonial, you know, Dave, this is right up your alley. I'd read CNN Money had reported that in 2007 there was $200 billion in warehouse funding. That's been reduced down to $25 billion, and Colonial had about 25% of that, which is substantially in step with your $4 billion number. And if that's true and they were to go away, then that has to be picked up somewhere else. Well, you may have a warehouse line now, but might that lender cherry pick? You know, might there be a bigger player come in and say, you know, and they say, you know, we're not going to renew your line. It's nothing you did, but they just have a better risk. So the BB&T piece would certainly be positive.
It would be positive. But here's what's really interesting, Scott. I was on a call just before we got on the radio program. One of my clients called in and says, Dave, I got a warehouse line. It looks like I'm getting approved with. This is a very well-capitalized company. But they said, we're hearing that these guys are not going to approve us if we're in third-party originated product. Now, there's wholesale, buying loans for funding loans for brokers. There is one of the areas that we see a tightening up in, and it's because of the concern of the whole wholesale channel. Is it quality? Is it being well managed? More and more warehouse lenders are going, yeah, we're going to give you a line, but we just as soon do it for your retail operation. We're not too crazy about the wholesale business right now. And that is probably one of the consequences that we're going to see out of this is many, many people are going to find themselves more challenged to find a warehouse line if it's just for a third-party origination. So, but the good news is there are plenty of warehouse lenders out there still doing and offering warehouse lines for third-party originators, but you got to have a strong net worth. You've got to have year-on-year positive earnings, bottom line. You're paying taxes. You're making money on your business. Imagine that. And that is probably one of the two biggest factors, net worth. And are you profitable? We've got companies with real strong net worth, Alice, out there applying for warehouse lines, but are being turned down because they had a couple really tough years. 06, 07 were really ugly, and they were still digging themselves out in 08. Now, a lot of ones that did not make it are gone. But the number of these new companies that are coming in are very well capitalized, but if they're coming in with a wholesale business model exclusively, they're finding themselves not being raced to the front of the line on the warehouse banking application.
How much can it help for them to have just really solid history with good procedures and management oversight? You know, I think that's usually, like you said, one of the bigger concerns. You've got a thin margin, but on top of that, you've got to have enough operation to control it.
Well, I think that's a really good point. And the number one thing is, if you are coming into the business with no experience, it's just not probably the right business model to launch at this particular time. You're going to have a lot of difficulty getting someone to listen to you that you've got it down, because there are enough nuances about it. We've seen the companies that have experience struggling with it. But those that are in wholesale that have been managing it carefully, have been on top of it, that guess what? They do their full QC process, and they actually read their QC reports, and they take positive action against those that are there's abuses. Those are going to be the ones that are going to survive and probably have plenty of credit offered to them. Very interesting developments, but we're very encouraged this week to see what has happened in the area of warehouse lending. Well, Scott, last week you had some thoughts as we were exiting the program, and I didn't let you get those in. I want to run around to each of you, see if there's any parting comments before we wrap this up this week, the program. Scott, I'm not going to leave you out, so I'm going to start with you this week. Any parting comments?
All good here on this end. Positive start to the week, mortgage-backed securities. Everybody keep their fingers crossed and keep it in perspective. Rates are still in the fives. For goodness sakes, rates are very good.
Yeah, that's for sure. Joe?
I'd just like to throw out there that this compensation thing that's in this rule is, you know, it's for mortgage originators, but it's a little bit concerning to me that somebody's saying, here's how you pay somebody, and you got to ask the question, what's next? Is it realtors? Is it,
yeah,
you know, who is it? Where is it? So from a fundamental basis, it riles me. I know that we don't have a real strong political leg to stand on at this point, but it's something I'd like everyone to have a little concern over.
Well, I think it's a good point. I think many realtors are listening to this program and are saying, well, that doesn't affect me. Not yet is probably the right response. I think it's coming. Thank you so much for that. Alice, any parting wisdom that you have out there?
Well, I guess I'll just say that, you know, a lot of the things we've been talking about are not things that we have to do yet. The things that are in place today, I think the simplest way to stay in compliance is think about your customer and do what's in the best interest of your customer. And then,
boy,
you know what,
good.
Most of the time, you're going to be in compliance.
Yeah, and that is so good. That is such a good point. That was what got us off. We were doing what many of us in the industry, or many of those in the industry, were looking at, you know, what was expedient, what was the quickest, easiest way to get this done. I want to say a special thank you as we close this out to our producer, Andy Alvey. You listen to these spots that we've been running around here before the program, in the midst of the program. Andy Alvey's produced these. He comes from the broadcast industry. He had his own radio program for years, and that's why it sounds so professional. So, Andy, thank you so much for helping us sound just a little more positive. Everybody, you guys have a great week out there. Alice, Joe, Scott, thank you so much for being a part of it. Let's all go out and have a great week and keep those rates. Talk to you soon next week. Thank you for listening in.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr and Scott Sanderson from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.